Here we are. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And today, we've got a smaller than usual panel, but that's usually a good thing in terms of conversation. First off, Jacob Blackman. How you doing, Jacob?
Hello. Thanks for having me again.
It's always a pleasure. And sitting next to Jacob in the palatial Banff Studios broadcast facility is Christopher McLaughlin. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. Easy on the cucumber water, okay? We've only got a couple gallons of that. Oh, God, I amused myself. I'm sorry. And sitting next to Chris is Steve Kenson. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming out. It's always a pleasure when you make it.
Likewise.
And so the big subject today is superhero adventure design, which presents some of its
threat or menace.
Threat or menace. And
I think it's both.
This is one of those subjects I kind of hesitated to come in without, you know, more of a specific take because it can be so broad and wide ranging, and you know, can it be different from one system to another? Because M&M's got peculiarities that icons might not have, and you know, but I think you know, you look at it overall, you know, when if you're designing adventures for your typical role playing game, you know, some kind of fantasy world, you've got certain assumptions, and you know. But when you're writing adventures for superheroes, you could be writing it for any kind of character, you know, all the way from Moon Knight up to Superman. And there's a range of powers and abilities in there that can make it challenging. And I think kind of maybe skews it more towards, you know, a freeform approach or at least trying to address, you know, all the possibilities. So, yeah, and I'm rambling, which is an indication that, hey, it is a wide subject. Why don't I let some of the experts talk about it? So I'm just going to throw out a question to you guys, you know, one, two, you know, just working down the aisle here. That's my phone. Sorry about that. I'm going to ask you for your two best tips for superhero adventure design and your two biggest pitfalls. And since we just introduced from left to right, we'll go to questions starting from right to left. So, Steve, you are first, sir.
Well, I think, you know, as far as tips for, you know, superhero adventure design go, the main thing to keep in mind is that superhero adventures, generally speaking, you know, tend to be focused around the activities and the actions of the villains. Generally, if you're looking at a fairly, you know, sort of comic book style plot line, the story begins with what is the villain's plan? What is the threat? What is it the heroes are looking to prevent? Because generally speaking, the heroes are looking to prevent something bad from happening. And so that's the sort of leading thing to begin with, is what's the bad thing that will happen if the heroes do not intervene? What is the villain's plan? And if you have a strong villain and an interesting scheme going on, you're pretty much halfway there to, you know, getting your adventure going as far as that goes. The other, you know, primary tip, you know, related to that, because we talked about the nature of the flexibility of a group of heroes, superheroes and their powers, is to stay flexible in terms of your adventure design. If you have a really good and clear grasp of who the villain is and what their scheme is and how they're going to go about it, the rest of it is all just detail as far as that goes. And you can build in a lot of detail in terms of the types of encounters the characters can have or the types of challenges they'll run into along the way. But you have to be flexible because sometimes things are not going to turn out to be as challenging as you think. Other times things are going to go in a completely different direction. And so you just have to be prepared for that as a game master and also as a designer to build in that flexibility and that sort of range of options as far as that goes. And that kind of, you know, leads into the issue of the biggest pitfall of superhero game design as well, is that same unpredictability. It's hard when you're designing a superhero adventure generically, you know, for just a group of player characters in a role-playing game, where you don't know who the characters will be or what their capabilities will be. You just have to guess and assume that the characters are going to have a wide range of options at their disposal and do your best to cover all the bases. But it's hard to get everything in there. So I don't know if that was two, but.
No worries. Well, since you're kind of the, Professor Emeritus when it comes to mutants and masterminds, take nothing away from you, Professor McLaughlin. Anything specific in that system a GM might want to, be aware of, if you have a player character who has mind control, you might want to, do X, Y, and Z, or any kind of gotchas you can think of like that?
Well, is it mind control kind of a pain in the butt for like any system that you run with? I mean, is there a system that mind control isn't a problem?
It's always kind of a pain for a GM, I think, maybe more so in some systems than others. Steve, what do you think?
I tend to agree. I mean, it's usually problematic in most games. And a lot of times it's about, coming up with ways around powers like that. I mean, the difficulty is, making sure that the character's powers are not completely useless. Otherwise, you may as well just design a game where mind control just isn't an option and characters can't have that power.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because I mean, how many heroes really have mind control?
Well, mind control is kind of a villainous power to begin with in a lot of ways. And you certainly, it's perfectly valid to design a superhero game and say, hey, some of these powers are just off limits. They're not heroic. The good guys don't have these things. You have game mechanics if you want for the villains to have them. But you can perfectly say, hey, these are off limits. And that's also a game master choice in building your campaigns and your adventures to say, I'd rather you didn't, in those cases.
Yeah, I've written a few adventures where I take into account and, saying if this comes up, then, after the first few encounters, the bad guys get wise and they start coming with, mental shielding on their helmets. And maybe they call 1-800, bad guy psychic and, tap in a contractor to help with the encounter.
But, you get countermeasures, that come up. And that's perfectly fine, too,
Okay. Chris. Yes. Oh, by the way, Aid Smith has joined us. Hey, Aid, how you doing?
Pretty good, thank you. Hello.
Our panelists from across the pond, glad you can make it. We were just talking about superhero adventure design, and we're moving down from right to left in my view, asking two best tips for superhero adventure design and two biggest pitfalls. And Chris, question to you.
Yes. Well, I think the two things that I learned over the years putting out the various time adventures or something is when you're writing a scene, you always have to consider the larger plot of it. I know there are a lot of genres and game systems where it's perfectly valid for the players to completely botch it and die at the beginning of the adventure. I mean, if you're playing Call of Cthulhu and you all die in the first 10 minutes, it's not a huge shock. And I ran a lot of Twilight 2000 when I was in college. Tanks are as advertised. Turns out they're pretty hard to take out. If a tank kills all your players, you kind of expect it. But the whole thing, the superheroes botch it and die in the first scene just doesn't seem to work for this genre. And so I think just to be true to the genre in most settings, you have an obligation to at least give them a chance to get to the boss fight. So for every scene leading up to the boss fight, I always put in, here's what to do if the players beat this in record time and they do way better than you expect, a way that you can keep the way that you can reward them for their success without spoiling the rest of the adventure. And also a mechanism for what if the players really botch this, what if for some reason the thug starts rolling criticals, things like that, here's what to do if things go worse than you expect, but we'll still give them a chance at the boss fight. And I think if you go in with that mindset, it kind of makes your mind a little more apt to consider that, this villain that I've spent weeks designing, the players may come up with a really solid way to beat him in 5 minutes. It makes you a little more ready for anything, I think.
Okay. And you'd mentioned the time of adventures before.
Yes.
So you did Time of Crisis, and then there were a couple others of that same.
There was Time of Vengeance, and there's a free download of sort of an alternate take of the Golden Age adventure that I did, which is the Charge of the Freedom Brigade, and I was really pleased by the reaction of the Freedom Brigade that they actually wandered into a source, but they actually wandered into the official M&M continuity from there. So very, very proud of those guys. And I also wrote part of the Emerald City adventure. I think I wrote the first two chapters of that. And there is a possibility that I may have another adventure on the way that may be sitting on someone's hard drive at the moment.
Oh, and I'm guessing it's probably too early to announce anything.
I can't officially say anything, but you know, it is entirely possible that I wrote an adventure in July and it is now being looked over and having good things said about it. And
okay, that's good news.
Hypothetically.
Okay. So you gave some advice. Can you think of some pitfalls or landmines maybe you've walked over in your own?
Just based on online reaction, there are a lot of people I think aren't comfortable with the notion in the superhero genre that, you know, that you can't have that total failure happen to you. You know, I there were a lot of people that that did like Time of Crisis and said, well, I felt like I was being railroaded. And I disagree because, you know, it's my baby. I think it's perfect. I think it's, you know, one of the giant works of Western literature. You know, I'm an author. What can I say? But, you know, I mean, there is a certain extent to that, that, you know, that there, that, you know, since there, if a G, unless a GM's feeling exceptionally cruel, you know, you can only fail so much in that. I can see why that might make players feel a little less than that. And I think that's just a question of, you know, what type of superhero game do you want to run here? I mean, do you want to have a satisfying Avengers? We get at least a chance to save the day, or are you looking for more of a Watchmen type thing too? You know, some of us will mysteriously explode at least until Jeff Johns gets mad at the guy who wrote this and decides to bring characters back out of spite, but that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. You mentioned Watchmen and that's you guys read comics this week?
I'm sorry.
Anyone read comics this week?
I get my monthly. I haven't got my shipping yet.
All right. Did you guys see the pages that came out of New York Comic Con?
Oh yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, it's a spoiler, but it's a horrible spoiler, but Steve, you probably don't want to know, do you?
It's fine.
Was it from Superman or Batman? They had,
it's from Doomsday Clock.
Doomsday Clock. And, and it's after the end of the Watchmen, you know, the original Watchmen, the seminal series. And, Rorschach's in the last page.
Okay.
Walking around all alive-like, yeah.
What's the interesting thing about the date, though?
You tell me, sir.
The interesting thing about the date that is stated at the beginning of Doomsday Clock, it is the same exact date that The Death of Superman was published. Mm. So there is a possibility of a link to The Death of Superman with Dr. Manhattan.
Wow, it's getting pretty meta.
It is getting a little bit meta, yeah.
I was thinking the same thing. Ice. Okay. Hey, sticking to the subject. Jacob, you're next. Two biggest tidbits of advice and two biggest pitfalls to avoid in adventure design. And for those who are not regular listeners, Jacob has recently released an adventure called Disaster Day from Instant Masterminds Third Ed. First adventure released for that system in kind of a while, so pick it up. It's gigantic. It towers like those big monoliths in 2001. It is massive. Jacob, tell us all about it.
I was surprised actually how thick the adventure turned out. Mm. I wasn't expecting it to be such a massive project, but there was so much that I wanted to include in it that it just seemed to expand on that. But yeah, Disaster Day takes place in my Superpowered Legends universe, and it is basically introduction for anyone who wants to come into the universe with new characters, and the idea is that a huge disaster has happened and none of the regular heroes are around to stop it, so it's up to you as the new heroes in town. But basically it goes into some of the ideas that I have about designing superhero adventures, and that is, you know, giving individual heroes a time to shine, and that's one of the first things that happens in the adventure. Is there are little random occurrences here and there, you know, bridges falling, looting happening, burning buildings, all this sort of thing. And those are little spots where a single hero has a chance to shine. So, you know, just going to one player to another, you know, what are you doing about this particular event? And letting them have their moment, you know. And often it's, I did this completely random for my player characters. So they really had to get, some of them had to get really creative with their powers. Like, you know, with the bridge collapsing, I handed it to the speedster. So it wasn't a matter of he had to, you know, be big and strong and support the bridge while everyone got off of it. He had to use his super speed powers to evacuate the bridge and just let the bridge fall because there was nothing he could do about that otherwise. But, you know, otherwise, just one of the things about superheroes is ultimately they are reactive as opposed to proactive. Bad things tend to happen and they're about trying to clean it up or save the day. And that's one of the problems that does exist with the adventure is that bad things have to happen first.
Is that a problem or is that genre emulation, though?
To a large degree, it's genre emulation. There are certain characters that are a little more proactive, and as heroes get a little more resources under them, they can be more proactive. Mm-hmm. Batman eventually, you know, he gets so much information gathering, he hears about things before they happen, and so he sets the trap for the Riddler as mm-hmm. opposed to the other way around.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing can happen, but that's more of a thing that a player and GM would really have to set up with each other, as opposed to more in a written adventure.
There is an element in plotting adventures where you can, you know, sort of have the looming threat, you know, kind of build up. And, you know, instead of jumping right to, as Professor McLaughlin began with, you know, so the multiverse is destroyed and you have to fix it. You can start with sort of the looming threat of, you know, there are this series of mysterious thefts going on, and that points to a larger plot, and the villain is working on assembling their scheme, but you have an opportunity to prevent the really bad thing from happening if you intervene, you know, soon enough. And so oftentimes superhero adventure plotting is about that, you know, sort of lead-in, you know, of at what point in the villain's scheme do the heroes have a chance to intervene? When do they find out something bad's going to happen? And, you know, how close are they to, you know, being able to fix it?
One of the few pitfalls I can find with writing adventures for superheroes is the fact that it's almost impossible to integrate a superhero's secret identity life into the adventure. That really has to be the purview of a GM working the adventure into their campaign.
Yeah, you'll find opportunities, you know, to like drop hints and, you know, say, oh, hey, you know, this particular scene involves a press conference. If any of the characters are, you know, journalists and their secret identities, this would be a great opportunity to include them, kind of a thing. But, you know, or, you know, likewise, if characters, you know, you can point out places where scientists can get involved in things and other sorts of inroads. But yeah, you can never know what a character's particular interests or their secret identity is going to be like.
At best, all you can do is try to write is if your plot line allows to allow some breaks where, you know, people can go home and mm-hmm. talk to their NPCs and, you know, have a moment or two I think I put one of those after the first chapter in Time of Vengeance, for instance. And it's, even though it's impossible to address the specifics of it, I think, you know, leaving breaths for air in your plot mm-hmm. line for that sort of thing can be very, very valuable.
Yeah, you
could also go the classic Call of Cthulhu way, where it's like, hey, you've got a rich uncle who who's just discovered something really bad, and that's your NPC, that's your secret identity, that kind of draws them in that way as well. The idea of supporting cast is something that can definitely be used, and I know a lot of the games I've played in, that doesn't get a lot of as much development as you see in the comics. So the idea that you've got, hey, an uncle or a mentor or something that's cropped up in past stories that brings you into the campaign will possibly use their secret identity rather than their heroic identity to release something about.
I know in games I've played in, just as a player, one of my pet peeves was always GMs who don't use NPCs. You know, you might spend, you know, half an hour writing up a paragraph about your Aunt Beatrice and how she's a passionate gardener, and that stuff just never finds its way into it. You know?
Well, that's pity, because that's some of the things that really help bring the setting to life.
Exactly. Yeah. Can you imagine the Batman TV series without all the Aunt Harriet stuff? I mean, it's just unbelievable. you couldn't do it. So it needs to be there, yeah.
I had played in a werewolf game I enjoyed for years when none of the NPCs had names. You know,
wow.
I was, after a while, I was like, hey, who are we talking to? Who is his underworld connection? Who knows all about? All right, his name's Bob.
Yeah.
I'm keeping notes. So, but yeah, it's definitely a thing. But yeah, I think to your guys' point, finding a way to work the NPCs into the game somehow organically, it's a lot nicer than just saying, there's a big robot stomping towards the city, and guess what? Your mom's in the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That card so many times.
I mean, even characters like Commissioner Gordon or Bullock or something, a character that constantly gets referred back to over and over again that brings the characters into it, so is always a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, that's adds some flavor to the campaign, makes it feel like a lived-in world as opposed to, you know, the generic superhero World 47.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, well, Aid, since you're talking, do you have two pieces of advice and two pieces of pitfalls? And you would be the first person to adhere to that format of the question if you do, so...
I don't think I do. So I'm going to throw that completely out of the wild as well.
Everyone else did too. It's fine.
Yeah. So I personally tend to try and put investigative stuff in my superhero stuff. I may open with a fight that will lead to something that expands, kind of like this onions concept where you get a little, rather than just having, you know, bad guy over there, go over and punch him and he falls down and hey, adventure over. I always like to have a bit of an investigative period where the characters will tend to kind of get deeper into the story and find out that stuff is going on around them that they're not actually privy to at the beginning of the stuff, so at the beginning of the story. So there will be kind of like background happenings going on, and again, to try and make the world seem a bit more lived in. So if you're running a campaign, having events that happened weeks ago, they go, oh, okay, now I understand why you know the ice guy stole the crystal from thing and we couldn't catch him because now he's just built this weapon for the other guy. So that would make some sense. So that would be the kind of stuff I would try and add to a campaign or a story. But the pitfalls I find, not for myself, but a lot of people tend to bring up, is they tend to think that writing for superheroes is a lot more difficult than writing for like traditional Dungeons & Dragons, where you can go, okay, well, fourth level character, okay, well, we know we can take out hobgoblins and goblins, that's no problem at all. Don't give him an ancient dragon, it's going to be a problem. But there's always that one character in the group that somehow has acquired the +5 Holy Avenger at fifth level that throws it out. So I think the idea that you can, that the published adventures, kind of, especially D&D ones, can kind of still cope with that, that's very similar to having a power set that you wouldn't expect. And while you're writing adventures, they have to kind of hopefully include that. The idea that one guy's got teleportation hopefully will not throw out the entire adventure. So the idea that you've kind of, you've planned for that. And even if it does throw out that one particular scene, then carry on. There's still more stuff to happen. So that's the pitfalls I find personally.
You know, Aid reminds me of something that, you know, getting back just a moment for talking about how you deal with mind control and things like that. You know, in a sense, you know, even though, like I said, mind control seems to me to be a very unheroic power, you kind of have to plan for that in the same way that, like, well, what if a character has a very common skill like interrogation or whatever and rolls a critical success on the skill roll?
Sure.
And, God, what's that classic Tarantino line? Yeah, you do that, he'll tell you if he wears women's underwear. You know, so yeah, you have to be prepared for, you know, the goon or the villain or whoever to spill their guts, because it can happen in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing you have to keep in mind is if there's like a grandiose villain scheme, it's kind of like a grand military operation. You know, you have to keep in mind that, you know, if you capture a private, he can only tell you so much.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even with mind control or a crit on interrogation or something. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think with that in mind, if you're building a fairly substantial plot line, it should be a while before the characters meet anybody that can possibly tell them much more than how to get to the next chapter.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
And the other thing, like you said as well, that if you're trying to emulate the genre itself, mm-hmm. let the heroes fail. That's what hero points are there for, especially Mutants Masterminds. The idea that you can have a guy be captured and like, okay, well, here's your hero points. You can find your way out. And then you can progress the storyline from that. Okay, you've overheard them talking now because you've been locked in their basement for 15 days. That's when you use your hero points, you get out, and then that's the progress of the story. So you've got to have this conversation with your players that they're willing to go that way and not be worried about the classic TPKs where everybody drops down there, because in comics very rarely that happens. They get put aside and then the villains continue their plot and then the heroes break out and they actually come back. So,
well, that's a key thing in superhero game design in general, is remembering that the genre is different. Failure in a superhero adventure is different from failure in a classic sort of D&D fantasy adventure. Failure in a superhero adventure generally means defeat and you get thrown into a death trap, or the villain, claps you in power neutralizers, or, some other, fate that the heroes have the opportunity to then bounce back from and, deal with that complication and then escape. In a classic superhero, story, the villain isn't going to, simply cap all the heroes, and call it a total party kill and move on. unless you're playing a very, different type of game. So it's also, keeping in mind the expectations of the genre in terms of how you design, the adventure. What does failure mean? What does success mean? Likewise, I find that there's a tendency to think about in a classic sort of puzzle dungeon approach, it's very important that the characters figure out exactly what the clues are and what the next step is, and overcome the death traps in a very life or death kind of way. But oftentimes in a superhero adventure, they're supposed to figure out what the next clue is. And in fact, there should be almost no chance that they're going to miss it. oftentimes there are things where from a design perspective, you don't want the players rolling dice for this because there's a chance they'll screw it up. it's far better to simply have the, bad guy spill his guts, because one of the characters is super intimidating or has mind control or whatever. So that they can go on to the next thing rather than, be stymied and just wandering around.
And again, on that point, it doesn't have to, the thing they discover doesn't necessarily have to be the be all and end all. It can be just part of one piece of the puzzle. So, now we understand, we've found that, we've done that, we know that is, but it still doesn't quite make sense. Let's go on to the next bit. Now it makes sense. After we found three of these clues, that's where it makes sense. So the idea, like you say, mind control, okay, you found the guy's thing out, but that's not the whole story. You've still got to figure out the rest of it, because this guy doesn't know anything.
Yeah, I find that mysteries can sort of be hard to run and hard to plan, because what the GM thinks is obvious given the information at hand might not be to the players. Mm-hmm. So although I guess Gumshoe has, a lot of good advice on how to, run that sort of campaign. So checking out. I wanted to mention something Walt sent me, our usual co-host. Walt can't be here because he had to drive his wife to the doctor out of state. But he had an interesting idea for an adventure that he's putting together for his game, Superus Revised. It's a multi-format, I guess, two-part adventure. In the first one, the players play special ops forces who go into an undersea research station to investigate loss of communication. And then they find some scary, creepy stuff there. So they, they call headquarters. And the second part of the adventure is when the super team gets sent in to investigate. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get the first session to sort of, establish the atmosphere and provide some clues. And then the next one, go into act on it. That's an interesting way to handle the narrative, I think. I'd be curious to see how that plays out.
You can play around with some interesting notions like that. I did an adventure for the old Marvel Saga game where the characters end up confronting a group of villains. There's sort of a, you know, an intro encounter, they end up confronting this mystery of basically their evil duplicates, you know, going around, you know, committing crimes, sort of a thing. But part of the reveal in the adventure is that the players are actually playing the evil duplicates unknowingly. And when their you know, evil twins show up, they're actually the real heroes who have finally escaped from the bad guy's lair, but the duplicates are programmed and think they're the real thing. So, you know, it's, you know, a twist to, you know, play with the player's expectations to, you know, make that reveal more, have more impact than just, oh yeah, they're, you know, your evil twins are out there, sort of thing.
That's a mind screw. That'd be interesting. So Walt Adventure is called The Orchid Agenda and probably be up for sale in the next week or two. Hey, speaking of things that are for sale, Mr. Kenson.
Hey, things for sale. I have things for sale. I just released a new source book for Icons called Icons Origins. That's all expanded character creation stuff, pre-generated archetypes, and alternative character creation options, expansions on specialties and knacks, and a bunch of supporting cast material. So all sorts of stuff for creating characters, tons of ready-made stuff for getting the game even quicker as far as that goes. That just went up for sale on DriveThruRPG and RPG Now. For Mutants and Masterminds, the third edition of the Freedom City book just went up for a pre-order on the greenreading.com site. So I'm super psyched to finally have that getting out there. It's a giant book. It's 320 pages. So
you're the Jacobs book.
You know, it's got a ton of stuff in it, and it was a lot of work and a lot of fun updating it to the present day. So it's got a ton of stuff. I'm really glad it's out there.
I was looking forward to the third edition Freedom City. That's going to be great.
And I'm proud of all four of my pages.
And so you should be.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the great things about the third edition Freedom City book is it sort of encapsulates a lot of stuff that has been added to Freedom City over the last 10 years. We've got, you know, bunches of pulled in a lot of things from a lot of the second edition era source books as far as Freedom City goes. So there's a lot of contributions to it as far as that.
Yeah, you guys have been working on this for years, I believe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's been one of those projects that kept getting pushed on the back burner for other higher priorities, you know, like when Wizards of the Coast comes along and says, hey, we want you to produce D&D books, you know.
That's right, it's fine.
Put this over here and, you know, go work on D&D books for a while.
Yeah, it's hard to say no when that phone call comes.
Right, you know, so yeah, it's one of those things that has been occasionally pushed aside, but I'm glad that it's finally getting its day.
Okay, and just to reiterate for anyone who maybe didn't hear it, greenronin.com, or mm-hmm. if you go to Green Ronin Pub on Tweet, sorry, on Twitter, what's wrong with me? you can find a link straight to the Freedom City third edition pre-order. Right. And you can give them your money, and you'll get this massive jiggling mound of awesome when it comes out. Which, how soon will that be, Steve?
Basically, pre-order means that it's ready to go to the printers. So that'll be a matter of weeks at this point. You know, it'll go to the printers. We'll get the print proofs. It'll actually get printed, and then it'll, you know, go into distribution and get shipped to the pre-orders. So.
It kind of depends on when we get the shock collar for Mangold that has the high voltage on it. You know, it turns out the old low voltage didn't get it done like it used to. So,
but if we pre-order it today, can we download the PDF?
Part of the pre-order deal is that you can also get the the PDF edition of the book for $5 as an add-on, and you can download that right away, you know, to be able to read over and see all of the gloriousness of it.
You have my money.
All right, so I'll definitely have the link in show notes, but that's real easy to find. So all right, and I'll be downloading it tonight myself. So cool, that is pretty awesome. And I mean, if friends of Freedom City probably know, but I'm guessing you updated the timeline. There's new characters who've taken their place, you know, in the ranks of the A level and the A level team, and the history has progressed and et cetera.
Yeah, quite a lot, you know, a whole bunch of new stuff going on. So I think folks will find all kinds of new opportunities for new adventures and new characters and all kinds of new things in Freedom City.
We got to hint at some of the changes as we worked on Rogues Gallery, and it was mm-hmm. neat to see the fans catch on to some of the teases as we went. And it'll be kind of fun for them to see the whole picture now.
Yeah.
I almost want to dive into that wholeheartedly, but we've been talking for almost an hour now, and we should probably save a deep dive on Freedom City for another podcast. What do you guys think?
That seems fair.
Okay, cool.
I'll do a dramatic reading of all my pages. I'm so up for that.
Oh, that's a given, yeah.
I think we should at least have a chance to read the PDF, at the very least.
Well, yeah, that would, you know, so you can ask intelligent, interesting questions about things happening in the meta plot, and I'm really interested in what's happening in the cosmic side of it, because I know there were some developments in the cosmic handbook, but it's been a few years since that, so
mm-hmm.
I'm guessing things have, you know, cool stuff going on. Yeah. Okay. All right. Can you guys speak to what's happening with Greater Than Games and the Mutants and Masterminds version they're doing at all?
The card game?
Yep.
It's in progress. Design is wrapping up. Beyond that, you know, there's not much to say apart from the fact that there's all kinds of cool new, you know, content as far as the character decks and the design work. Christopher Bedell, who's the designer for Sentinels of the Multiverse and who's doing a lot of the primary design on the Sentinels of Earth Prime, wanted to do a lot of new takes on the characters. So, you know, he's not just, you know, porting over the speedster mechanics from Sentinels of the Multiverse to do Johnny Rocket in Sentinels of Earth Prime, but wanted to come up with new mechanics that fit those characters, from the very beginning, essentially. So I think that's, you know, folks who are familiar with Sentinels of the Multiverse are going to find some, you know, really interesting new stuff in the game.
Okay, cool. Well, I need to wrap up here in a little bit. I got to go pick up my kid from daycare. Any closing thoughts on anything we've talked about, adventure design or Freedom Cities or Icons Origins?
All I've got to say is on adventure designs, don't make superhero adventures look like D&D adventures. instead of going room by room, you want to hit what is basically going to be the highlights. If this was going to be made into a television series or movie, what are the big scenes you want to show up? That's what you want to put in a superhero adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one vote from Jacob against 10x10 rooms with the orcs guarding treasure chests. So. Good to know. Steve, so Icons Origins. We should probably have a podcast just talking about that, because I just read through it this week briefly, and there's a lot of new material in there.
Cool. Yeah, we should talk.
Okay, cool. Aid, Chris, anything?
Well, you know, as always, those of us who seem to have have angered the flat tire gods at some point would appreciate you nice folks going to your local PDF dealer and picking up a copy of World Defenders the Summit, because all that money goes directly into the fund that keeps me getting to school every day and educating your children and making the RPG products that you know and love. So please check that out, and you know, and let me know you got it, and I'll probably, like, you know. You know, like, thank you personally. I'll sign the PDF. I'm desperate. What can I say?
You
know,
there's no rule saying you only have to buy one copy.
Oh, yes. And you know, Christmas is right around the corner. And really, what could be better than a pre-made M&M superhero team? Nothing I can think of, quite frankly.
Wade, you got any closing thoughts?
Nobody has a follow-up to that.
No, I'm all good. I think everything's done, in my opinion.
All right, cool. Folks, thanks for tuning into another episode of the Banff Podcast, and we will catch you next time.